All right, our next storyteller this evening is Dr. Mark Ringel. He is the author of the book Digital Healing, about the intersection of machine-based communication and medical technology. He also, at once upon a time, was a contributing commentator on KUNC. So if you remember him, give him a round of applause right now.
Thank you. For those of you who used to listen to me, to my commentaries on KUNC, I'm sorry. It always disappoints people when they see me, but it's 10 minutes, it says here. My story starts exactly 49 years and 4 days ago, December Fool's Day, 1969, was the first draft lottery for the Vietnam War. And of course, I remember that day. I didn't do so well. My number was 72. And that meant that I would certainly be draft bait if I didn't find another way out. So I considered my options. One was to apply as a conscientious objector. Another was to leave the country. And I chose a third one that, believe it or not, was the easiest of those. I went to medical school. I had thought I might be a psychiatrist anyway, but I really wanted to be a writer. But I could get 4-year deferment with a 2S student status. So I went ahead and I matriculated at the University of Illinois Medical School in the fall of 1970. That's in Chicago. Medical school is a tough thing to do. It's especially tough if you're not sure what you're doing. If you're not sure you want to be a doctor, that's a hard row to hoe. I did find something, though, that I really liked doing while I was in medical school. I volunteered at a free clinic. Now, this is 1970 in Chicago. The infamous Democratic Convention had happened in 68 with the police riot and all the leftists, hippies, yippies, and so on, demonstrating. And so there was a lot of political activity, a lot of leftist kind of stuff going on at that time. And so there was a free clinic movement, which was community groups. The best known was the Black Panthers, and they had clinics and food kitchens and stuff all over the country. But there were a number in Chicago of free clinics, maybe a dozen or two, that provided medical services to the underserved in the neighborhood. So right around the corner from where I lived, in a neighborhood I couldn't afford to live in now, but back then there were poor people there, very beginning of gentrification, was the Betances Free People's Health Center, which was put together by the Young Lords, which was a street gang, Puerto Rican street gang, mostly ex-junkies, who decided they would get political and serve the people in their community. So they opened this clinic, and there was a great big portrait of Che Guevara over the door. I'm not kidding. Just so you can picture it. By the way, John Prine played right down the block at the board. This pretty cool place to live, a pretty good, interesting time. I loved working at the clinic. Especially my second year, I loved working at the clinic because this woman walked in named Luann, who had just graduated from nursing school. She was volunteering too. Love at first sight. Within a month or two, we were living together in that apartment that in the neighborhood. And after no more than a couple of months that we had been together, she got a phone call from a friend of hers in San Francisco named Pat. Pat had been a roommate of Luann's when Luann was a nursing student at Loyola up on the north side. And Pat had just seen Luann's note on a bulletin board in a laundromat. And they wound up roommates just by accident. Pat had nothing to do with medicine or anything like that. So she had, after about a year, she had escaped a... what's the word? Enmeshed family and Chicago winters and moved to San Francisco, which we've heard about already tonight. Hippie, free, sex, drugs, rock and roll. And Pat was really happy there. But she had called her friend Luann to say that she needed to come back and could she stay with her, not knowing that Luann wasn't even alone anymore. But Luann said sure, and that was fine with me. And Pat was calling to see if she could stay there because she had just heard that her dad had been diagnosed with a cancer in the belly. I think it was a lymphoma, and he didn't have long to live. So he was in the hospital. She flew back. The apartment right behind the one that Luann and I lived in, it was the other half of the second floor of this beautiful three-story brick building, which had been, by the way, illegally divided, but the landlord had pull with the city so they could get away with it. That's another story. And the two apartments were connected through a pantry that we just left the door open. So it became one apartment, we shared a kitchen, and it was really wonderful. We got along very well, but, of course, Pat's father was dying. Well, Luann was really smart about this kind of stuff, even though she was hadn't had a whole lot of experience. And so she called Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who you've probably heard about. She's famous for her book on death and dying, which kind of opened the whole issue of dying to the American public in the late 60s. Well, Kubler-Ross was a psychiatrist at the University of Chicago. She also had just started a hospice. So we called, at Luann's urging, they called and they got an appointment with Kubler-Ross and decided they were going to try to bring Pat's dad, Bob, home to die at home. This was unheard of in 1972. Edna, Pat's mother, called the Cancer Society. They got a bed there, and they went down, met with Kubler-Ross, and then after that, with a remarkable nurse named Jane Kennedy, who was Kubler-Ross's first employee, and she also taught Edna, Pat's mom, and Pat how to give IM injections, that is in the big muscles, in Luann's butt. I've always regretted I couldn't be there for that. So they brought him home in an ambulance, put him in the hospital bed, and I never saw Bob do better than sit up. I never carried on conversation with him. He had been a Chicago police officer, great big strapping man as he was described, but when I saw him, he was a long bag of bones. His face was gray. He could mutter a few words sometimes. Mostly he moaned. My job, my one kind of specific job to do along with Luann, was every 4 hours, and that's what the prescription said, every 4 hours, we gave him an IM shot, that is in the muscle, usually in the thigh or in the butt, of morphine. So the time would come, we draw up the medicine, give him the shot, and it would take about 30 minutes before he stopped moaning. Then he would be calm and fairly comfortable, stop writhing in the bed, 2 or 3 hours, and then it would start up again. Now, in retrospect, of course, there are much, much better ways to handle pain. I've learned that over the years. My last clinical job was as medical director of a hospice in Greeley. But anyway, this is what we had to offer that was medical. We did the stuff like, you know, empty the urinal and straighten his bed and that kind of stuff. Pat and Edna never got to practice their shooting skills because Luann and I did it. We just stayed there. We stayed there was 5 or 7 days. I would sit with Bob. Besides being able to give him the shot, I would just sit there. Sometimes I read, rarely talked to him. Sometimes I'd hold his hand. I was there when people would come and visit, and there was all kinds of family and friends and stuff who came. He was known to be a wonderful guy. I've always regretted that I never got to know him. And then I was sitting there one afternoon. Edna was in there doing what she does, which was dusting or something. She was always doing something like that. And she said, I think he stopped breathing. And sure enough, he had. By the way, we didn't need a mirror under his nostrils or anything. He had died. That was it. We went home, Luann and Pat and I, that evening. Pat slept between Luann and me in our bed. I was there for the wake, you know, and for the funeral and for all of that. Pat is still one of the best friends I've ever had in my life. We're still in close touch. Her brother and sister, Edna's gone, but her brother and sister, we became part of each other's lives then. But what did I learn then? What was important? Well, I learned that presence is what you have to offer somebody. Period. Especially when they're dying. I mean, you know, where's the room for the bullshit at that time? Just being there is the best thing you have to offer them. That's what I did with Bob. I learned that in part from Luana. It really changed my life and changed my career. I learned if you can do it, it's really good to be able to die at home. Surrounded by people you love, people who love you, things that are familiar and that you know and that you like. Just having people be with you. If people can talk, and you know, people would say to me, well, how do you do this when I was doing the hospice job? How do you work with people who are just in such agony, emotional agony, like the family all the time? And what I said is, without blinking an eye, I almost always get more back from the person than what I give. And it's more than anything else is by my presence. I mean, I'm much better at handling pain and those kinds of things now too, but it's just being there. So let me say, it's good to die at home, but with that connection, it can be in a hospital room, it can be at a nursing home, it can be by the side of the road. It's that presence that makes home.